Welcome to a special edition of Points North on Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Tom Kramer. 20 years ago this month, the Traverse City Regional Psychiatric Hospital closed its doors for good. The building, known by many names over the years, the Northern Michigan Asylum, the Traverse City State Hospital, or simply Building 50 among them, continues to be a centerpiece of the community. At times, the hospital supported more than 1,000 workers and was home to more than 3,000 residents. Those residents of the hospital included people dealing with tuberculosis, schizophrenia, and alcoholism, along with ailments classified as nostalgia and old age. Some conditions were simply labeled unascertained. The doors were locked back in October of 1989. Around the time of that decision, the hospital employed 285 people, was home to fewer than 200 patients, and had a budget of almost $13 million a year. Closing the hospital was expected to save the state $2 to $3 million every year. The state's director of the Department of Mental Health said it was a painful decision, but he insisted it was in the best interest of the patients. By the 1980s, patients around the country were being treated more by community mental health facilities than by the larger state-run hospitals. And when the doors closed, it was the last time many former employees would see the wards where they had worked for decades. Tricia Blackmore was a nurse at the hospital for 32 years. She started right around 1950, after her brother and twin sister were already employees. I spoke with Tricia at the annual luncheon for former state hospital employees.
The best place in the world to work. All the employees and all the staff were super people. And you were helping people that couldn't help themselves. And when you take one of the patients or residents, that's what they call them, I guess, they would get well and get out of the hospital and go home. And it's, all of them didn't, but there's some that never did. But when you got some healed and out on their own again, it made you feel good.
A few days after that luncheon, I met with four other former employees outside Building 50 at what is now the Village at Grand Traverse Commons. Art Hogarth, Shirley Rogers, Joyce Weathers, and Bob Maddox had more than 110 years' experience combined at the state hospital. We'll eventually make it to the women's wing, which has been barely touched since its doors were closed 20 years ago, but first let's look at some of the changes to the men's wing. This is the side that now houses an Italian restaurant, art galleries, wine tasting rooms, law offices, and residential condominiums. The tour guide is Minnie Minervini from the Minervini Group, the company leading the restoration of the Village at Grand Traverse Commons. Of course, what these four former workers see now is quite a bit different from how they left it. The wide hallways are still there, but on the other side, walls have been removed between offices, patient rooms, and storage, transforming that space into upscale residential condos. As they walk, the foursome falls back into the language of when it was a hospital, using floor and ward numbers to describe where they are, and they can't help but tell a few stories.
Well, the top floor...
floors like you guys do.
This is the top floor.
This is third floor.
Third floor of the men. 18. Yeah. This would be 18. This would have been the teenage.
Before they had opened the children's unit in 69, this was
this
kids.
Would be 16 to 21 or something like that.
And then before that, it was geriatrics. This was a nice ward to work. I like this. Yeah.
What do you think when you see these, how they've been...
It's amazing. It's amazing. And Shirley and I were just talking about it. Well, she was too. She was talking about, you know, we know there's a lot of money here to be made, but we don't care because we want to see these buildings preserved. Do you know that back years ago, they had a wrecking crane all set up across the road, all set, ready to start. I don't know if you guys know it or not.
A what?
A wrecking crane, all ready to start tearing down.
I knew they were,
24. Yeah. It was sitting there, all ready to go, within days of going, maybe even a day or two. And all employees and the public got up in arms and got a whole little dancing, and they put a stop on it.
Well, you know, it really broke my heart, even when they tore down 33, 35, 41, receiving, because that was where I spent most of my time of my, 31 years.
Yep, I worked there, too.
In fact, I was
telling Joyce.
And those were newer buildings.
Yeah, I was telling Joyce that 41 was opened in 54. and I worked there when it opened. And I also worked there when I retired.
Oh, did you?
I'd you know, been all around the hospital.
Right.
But I ended up working 41 as I retired. But no, when I first came to the hospital, I spent my first half a day on Hall 10. And then they took me down to Hall 6. And I spent months there on 6. 6 and 5 was the most disturbed wards. 5 for the women, 6 for the men.
And I never worked either one of those wards other than to supply them. But I have heard a lot of stories about...
I got stories about every ward.
Oh, I'm sure you have.
Every ward.
I'm sure you have.
Yeah, I've had little things to happen to me. Or little things have gone on. On every ward.
Haven't we all?
Do I dare to tell you a story on your outfit? You can edit it out if you want to. I told you this. I'd never told these people by that. We're working 18 here. Like I said, it was old geriatrics. And in them days, women weren't allowed on this side. Men weren't allowed on the other side. They were separated. That was it. We had this little old fella here, 60-some years old. Today, to me, that'd be a young guy. Mm-hmm. Looking out the window here, and he saw a little old woman out here. Another guy and I stand by him, you know, and he says, "Boy," he said, "I'd like to get out of this place for a few minutes." He said, "I'd go down there and I'd grab that gal." And we thought we was going to hear a big case, you know. He said, "I'd take her damn corset off and take one of them staves out of that corset, and I'd make a key and get the hell out of this place." That's the best story I ever heard in this place. Real nice. Yeah, I had a lot of good memories of this place.
That is some place, isn't it?
Oh. Wow, gorgeous. Unbelievable that they could
do this. So this was essentially a basement room, and then we made this wall here to create a corridor.
Right.
And so that's a bathroom, and then this is a little guest room, but this is the typical room.
Yeah, this is the size.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes two would be in a room this size.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could sleep here. Be sleeping out in the hall with a chair.
Right.
I don't think it seems like 20 years, because I have some very good friends that I keep in contact with, and once a month we go to lunch, and of course it always reverts back to working at the hospital. And so, you know, in other times it does seem like it's longer, but it doesn't seem like I've been retired 20 years either.
It was a pretty close community of employees when it was open.
Definitely. And a lot of families here. You didn't dare talk about anybody because they were probably related to...
grandfathers and fathers and sons and mothers and daughters, and my mother worked here.
Third and fourth generation.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
In February... on Hall 10, when I worked there, we had a euchre tournament every Saturday night. Yeah. Yeah. And the girls said that was their best time they ever had, just like a date, because we run it just like a euchre tournament outside. The winners had to move, and you couldn't sit with the same people at the table all night long. You know, you had to circulate. And they thought that was just great. And then that forward, we had a little brown jug, and whatever hall won the tournament that year got their name put on the jug, and they got to keep it till the next February.
Where is the brown jug?
I don't know where it's at now. Floyd Plank bought the brown jug in, you know, because he worked on Hall 8, and I worked on 10, and, you know, we used to do stuff like that.
That was afternoons.
And in the 60s there... Oh, it was later than that. Had to have been in the 70s when they started hitting with Navane a lot. I worked Hall 10, which was chronic schizophrenics, and we had a clown face beanbag. And those patients used to stand in line just to beat the attendant at beanbag, you know. Once we started the Navane, you know, I got them moving. And it was amazing. This Lyle, he was a patient there. He used to just stand and be quiet, never said a word. We was playing euchre there one day, and one of the patients said, "I'm quitting." And Lyle says, "Mr. Maddox," he says, "can I play?" And I said, "Well, if you know how, Lyle, sit down." he sat down and he played better than all of us, you know.
Art the only one to pass.
We then take an elevator back to the garden level and head north to a locked steel door. This is the way into the women's wing, a part of Building 50 that hasn't yet been transformed by the Minervini.
I'm not going to be sweating in here.
Nope.
It looks much like it did when the state left the building in 1989, except, of course, it's had 20 years to fall into disrepair. The paint on the walls isn't just chipped. It's peeling in large petals of faded color. It's as if the building is shedding its skin from the inside. And that skin covers the floor alongside the occasional beer can or candy wrapper. Still, this foursome can see past all of this and remember the day room full of residents waiting for their name to be called from behind the Dutch door of the medication room.
Now we're home.
Now you're home,
right?
Home. Home, sweet home.
This is the woman's ward.
I don't have nothing against being in these places. You know, people always run these places down and stuff. And I hated it when they closed this, because I always figured if I ever went off the deep end, this is where I wanted to be. I knew I'd get good care and taken care of. You know, these buildings are there. Look at the structure of this. And this goes from the basement up through the attic. These buildings are here. Yeah. Yeah, these are nice. I wouldn't doubt what I've spent time in this alcove. I used to have to come over sometimes and sit on these women's wards when they'd be having trouble.
So these were huge seating areas, right?
No.
Wow. I worked every ward, even the women's, because I'd get assigned for something. And then as a fire and safety officer, we had to go through all of them. The bathroom. Yeah, this is the day room.
You know, the paint is just hanging. I don't want to get my fingers in it, but don't you want to just reach out and see how big of a thing you can, paint chip you can get off of there?
Do you remember the colors?
Oh, definitely. These colors were throughout the hospital. I haven't liked green since then either.
Oh, I think it's sad. I think it's sad. This hospital should have never been closed in the first place. See, I worked here at night. I worked on this unit at night here in the one next door, 3. And you'd have to, you know, check on people during the night. But this was beautiful. You know, they had a nice rug on the floor. There was a piano there, books, vases. Yeah, you'd see little tables with a lamp on it and chairs around. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. But they're restoring it, too, so that's good. Yeah. Oh, this, see the half door there? This was, see, now this was the med room. See, they had the medicines and all the supplies and stuff. And this right here would just only be open halfway, and then you'd call their name and they'd come up and get their medicine.
Well, I'm just amazed at, you know, between here, the before and the after. But I'm not familiar with this area because I never worked over here. But I'm just appalled at what has happened to, you know, to the walls and stuff. But I understand, you know, the buildings were vacant for a long, long time, much longer than when the hospital closed, so... But I think I kind of like the after than I do the before.
Now, this is all 5. This was the most disturbed for women. Good thing.
What do you think about when you're here? Are you?
Oh, I love it. The shape of this doesn't bother me. You know, the way this stuff is peeled off and stuff, paint, doesn't bother me a bit. What I like is the old structure and the buildings and the way they were designed and built, maintained and stuff. You know, this, no, these could be scraped and fixed up and painted. They wouldn't have to go through all the stuff there, which is all right, and I'm glad they're doing it. But no, you don't need out. See, this here, these windows were put in years later. See, this has all been redone.
And the room,
this is a seclusion room. And there is a seclusion room, big heavy door, screen window, had a lock. You couldn't open it. You'd have to have a key to lock it, get it in there.
Yeah, they had a mattress in there.
Want me to tell you a story about these? One of these?
Art Hogarth has a story from just about every corner of the building. He was joined by Shirley Rogers, Joyce Weathers, and Bob Maddox, all of them former employees of the Traverse City Regional Psychiatric Hospital. An employee reunion is being planned for next summer to be held right there at Building 50.
Jesus, forgive you of your sins. Jesus, forgive you of your sins.
This is a special edition of Points North on Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Tom Kramer. And that is Andy Lindsay, performing for a group of disabled senior citizens in Traverse City. Andy was a patient at the state hospital in the early 1970s. He was just a boy then. Like the rest of his childhood, Andy remembers his stay in the hospital as an abusive and ugly time.
Drama there, Aquila. That place was a living hell for me. And through the dust and the smoke of that man-made hell, I went through all the tunnels and stuff like that. Through the dust and smoke of that, I tell you what, I just don't want to think about that anymore. It was just absolutely a nightmare for me. I never wanted to go back to that again. I don't even want to have a memory of it. I want them state hospitals torn down nonetheless and not have a memory of it ever again. Lock the doors, padlock them and chain them, board the windows up nonetheless, and never open the son of a gun again. I was just diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder. Nonetheless, and I have an undifferentiated type of schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, too. I also have post-traumatic stress disorder. Ah, the devil attacks you all the time. Now, here's a song that I wrote just after I got out of the hospital. This is called No Turning Back. Nursing staff got on me and gave me a shot in the rear, and I yelled, "Mother effer!" I said like that when they gave me that shot, and I went into seclusion that day. And all of a sudden, I got so mad when I came to, I busted down that door in the seclusion room, and they couldn't even hold me. They just couldn't even hold me. I busted out several times.
There ain't no turning back. There ain't no turning back. No, no, no. There ain't no turning back. And the Lord pulled me out of that hateful place. I considered even as much a bar. The Lord pulled me out of that stinking bar, and I don't go serenading drunks on their way to hell, and there ain't no turning back.
Let me say a prayer.
No,
right.
No, no, there ain't no turning back.
My dear Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for this recovery process I have done. Nonetheless, Lord. And Lord, I thank you so much in the name of your Son, Jesus, for getting me out of that institution and getting me into something like independence, like today. Now, today is really something that is special for me, and I celebrate this as a hats off to me. Nonetheless, Lord, and I thank you in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.
Draw near to him, and you will.
Andy Lindsay talked with reporter Linda Steffen.
On your face. Draw near to him.
draw near.
When the Traverse City State Hospital closed its doors in October of 1989, the city of Traverse City suddenly had a big job to do. What was once state land, kept in check by hospital staff and the state police, was now part of the city. And that meant the city's police and fire departments had to keep an eye on a piece of property that quickly became a favorite spot for people of all ages to explore. Ralph Soffredini was Traverse City's police chief in 1989.
And so we had to adjust to that and change our patrols, and then we were taking complaints from up there. And that, as you know, it's a very big piece of property. And when you leave something without anybody being there, you have malicious destruction of property. You got break-ins, people wanting to go in. Of course, they had a whole bunch of tunnels. And it seemed like everybody wanted to get into the tunnels for whatever reason. And then the other thing you had is people taking things because the area was closed, and they would take mementos of the hospital.
Along with the extra property now under the jurisdiction of the city, Soffredini says he was handling situations with former patients, many of whom were moved into adult care facilities in and around the city.
And a number of those folks created problems from the standpoint is their behavior is a little bit different than what some of the people, even though we had the state hospital here for just a number of years, there were more people that were out. So we had a little problem with that at first until, for a period of about 10 years things kind of quieted down. And we have a number of people in our community now, but it's not near the problem it was when the hospital first closed.
While issues with former state hospital patients have lessened over the years, the lack of a facility to handle mental illness continues to wear on police departments around the state and around the country. Before lawmakers voted to close the hospital back in 1989, Joe Conroy, a state senator from Flint and a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee's Subcommittee on Mental Health, told the Traverse City Record Eagle that he had some real concerns about closing the hospital. He was worried that the state would be shoving off the mentally ill onto the local law enforcement and judicial systems. He was right. Soffredini says that's essentially what happened.
Well, there's no doubt about that, and in which I think is a travesty. I think there are people that need a closed setting, and we don't have that. The reason they closed those hospitals is it wasn't humanitarian. It was primarily money, and they closed them and saved a whole bunch of money and wound up transferring the cost to the jail section in our county jails and, of course, our state prisons. There's some folks that are in prison that don't need to be there. They're mentally ill, and so they wind up. And we have a hospital that's got people who are mentally ill, and it's a prison. But that's not where they belong. They don't belong in jail. I think the idea that we went into, and this is back when I was a detective, is that the mental health, community mental health was going to take care of that. Well, they take care of it until you keep cutting their money, so they don't have the staff to do that. I think that's the problem we have today. But to have them go to jail, all they're doing is making the people who may have been aggressive and may have caused and violated some laws, but it's because of their mental inability to deal with the society, are in jail now as victims themselves, because they become victims when they're in the jail.
Traverse City Commissioner Ralph Soffredini. He was the city's police chief back in 1989 when Michigan closed the state hospital. And when the hospital closed, people in the community had already been fighting for years to protect the buildings. Carol Hale started in 1976, working to get the state hospital on the National Register of Historic Places.
And then in 1982, 83, we heard that they were going to bulldoze some of the buildings. And showed up on the morning that the contractor was there with the wrecking ball and the state police and the city police, and it was a real Mexican standoff. But the city stopped the demolition of three buildings there that are still standing.
Hale says although efforts at saving the state hospital buildings and grounds have not always been successful, several buildings have been demolished, there remains a consensus in the community that those efforts have always been worthwhile.
That property and the buildings mean so much to this community. It has employed so many people and helped so many people in the community. And it was a place that from the community response after stopping the demolition, we had so many organizations that were interested in the future of that. Unfortunately, the state of Michigan didn't understand what place this had in our community, and that the community really was in love with it and wanted to save it. And it's taken a lot of patience, but here we are.
Hale's connection to the state hospital is simply that as someone living in Traverse City. She says the building had such a strong presence in the community, there seemed to always be a reason to be there.
My children played over there on the grounds, and we walked the dog in the hills. So I was very familiar with the area, but not with the buildings that much, other than they were imposing.
You know, she brings up the, you know, it, I bring up the, you know, the law enforcement, but as a family, anybody that had any kid that was in a junior high had to go up to the state hospital, and they had to collect leaves because it was a science project, and they had they had an enormous amount of trees that really have tags on them and tell you what, and they're just, I mean, it's just like different trees all over the place. So almost every family. It was a family outing. You'd go up there, and it was kind of like hide-and-go-seek, trying to find the leaves, and you look at the tree to see what kind of tree it was, and to do that. And the other thing, they used to have search for, you know, different kinds of insects, and everybody would go up there, too, to do that as a family. So you spent a lot of time as a family up there.
The idea of having families around is still a goal of the current owners of Building 50, now known as the Village at Grand Traverse Commons. The project to bring new life to these old buildings is a project being watched by developers and preservationists around the country. In fact, a few weeks ago, a group of people associated with another former psychiatric hospital, this one in Minnesota, was in Traverse City to visit Building 50 and the Minervinis. They were looking for some ideas to take back with them to Minnesota. And there's plenty of interest in the project right here in Michigan. Here's a story produced by Kyle Norris from Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor.
It is pizza night at the Pleasanton Brick Oven Bakery in Traverse City. Once a week, the baker closes shop early, then opens the kitchen to the people in the neighborhood. Ray Minervini always helps the little kids cook their pizzas in the brick oven.
That's what's really fun for me. I see it. I see the little kids that are, their eyes lighten up, you know? That's pretty cool.
Kids are running in and out of the bakery, and people sip red wine while they nibble on pizza. But things did not always look like this. It used to be the Northern Michigan Asylum. This place was a state-run mental hospital for more than 100 years. In fact, the bakery is just a stone's throw away from what used to be the asylum's main building, Building 50. It is massive. It looks just like a huge haunted house. The hospital closed in 1989. Actually, many mental hospitals across the country closed during that time. And soon enough, the structures here started to crumble, and the community had a big tug of war over what to do with the property. The buildings here caught Raymond Minervini's attention. He was moved by their history and their beauty. And he says these buildings, well, they speak.
They told us that it's better when people are in them.
And that's basically what he's doing, getting people back into the buildings. Raymond runs the Minervini Group, along with his father, Ray, the pizza guy. They bought Building 50, plus a couple of smaller buildings, for $1. And then they turned around and spent $1.5 million putting new roofs on those buildings. Today it's called the Village at Grand Traverse Commons. And it's modeled after the idea of those old neighborhoods, where you've got a main street studded with different stores, and people live above those stores. Raymond Minervini says he loves the idea of those old neighborhoods.
We want that mix, so you are not segregated so much by what you need to do through the course of the day, but you are able to do a lot of it in the same neighborhood, and more importantly, you're able to do it, hopefully, without getting in your car.
Keith Schneider says the idea of centralized neighborhoods is something Michigan needs to do, and fast. Schneider writes for the New York Times about the economy and smart growth urban design. Schneider says some places in Michigan already understand this idea.
Grand Rapids has gotten this story. Ann Arbor's gotten this story. Traverse City has gotten this story. But, you know, Detroit, we haven't gotten this story. And we have to do that. And I think this project, reconstruction of an old state hospital into something entirely new, a village, a neighborhood, is the kind of values and principles that have to be applied to our cities.
Schneider says the Minervini Group has made this place extremely walkable and done the renovations in environmentally friendly ways. Schneider says once Michigan can embrace these ideas and do these things with its cities, then Michigan will recover. And Raymond Minervini, the guy doing all of this, agrees. He says he can't just save a historic building for the fun of it. He says there has to be an economic benefit. Minervini says right now his company is making a little money, by selling the condos they've redeveloped in Building 50 and by leasing out the buildings to offices and stores.
And then we have a coffee roaster, Higher Grounds Fair Trade Coffee Roasting. We have Left Foot Charlie Winery, our first urban winery in the state of Michigan. Black Star Farms has a tasting room.
He also says they're bringing jobs, business really opportunities, money, and energy to the area. Minervini says if this project wasn't happening, this place would just be a bunch of crumbling old buildings.
Kyle Norris is a reporter for Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor. And this is Points North on Interlochen Public Radio. Sue Orchard was a smart kid, always did well in school, but in high school she noticed her grades started to slip. And she didn't do well as a college student either. Instead, in her early 20s, battling with her mind, she ended up as a patient at the Traverse City State Hospital. That was 30 years ago. She's been in psychiatric care ever since, and even returned once for another brief stay at the state hospital. Today she lives in a downtown adult foster care home. Sue Orchard remembers her first stay at the Traverse City State Hospital as a young woman.
I was at Michigan State, but they brought me up here and put me in the state hospital. And I've been in Traverse City ever since. And I stayed in the state hospital for 2 months. And it was a good ordeal. I liked it. I knew I needed to be there. They had oil painting, which I was too sick to do. They had music, so I did that. They had outside for half an hour. They had just wander around. There was even ping pong, and I liked that. I played that. I wandered around a lot. You talk to others a little bit. Some people don't like to talk. Some people do. I'm a quiet person, too, so I just walked around, kept to myself. And they had nice beds for us and our own rooms. And they supplied toothbrushes and brushes, and we had our own clothes. And I would go into the wardrobe room and pick out clothes to wear. And they kept the bathrooms real clean, and we mopped our floors, and they mopped and buffed the hallways. Very clean, very clean. Medicine in the morning, and I think just at night, maybe in the afternoon, I can't remember. Morning and night, though. And you have to take medicine, something that very positive. And I learned that. And I took it. And one time I was overdosed. You know, not overdosed, but it was too strong for me. And I told the doctor, she said, okay, I'll take it away. And she did. And they helped me out. And I was okay after that. Just one time it was too strong for me. And it was strong medicine. And it is strong medicine. They had a TV going all the time. And a radio going all the time. And, well, we just made friends. Had smokes every hour. People waited for those. I started meeting other people. And a girl named Lisa, who became my best friend. Lots of people.
And she still is your best friend?
Yes. Yes, she is. She always hung around me and showed me the ropes. She said, I'll show you the ropes. Yeah.
Sue Orchard spoke with reporter Linda Steffen. Not only did Sue meet her best friend in the state hospital, she stayed in touch with other patients, too. After she got out, Sue started to socialize more, started enjoying life.
Oh, yes. I started meeting other people. And went out to coffee and go for rides and talk to people and meet people. And it was great.
For mental health professionals, that's a sign that Sue was doing better in her battle with mental illness, that she was recovering. Recovery can be a bit of a nebulous term when talking about mental illness. But as Linda Steffen reports, it's become a modern standard of care.
When the Northern Michigan Asylum first opened in the 1800s, those who entered as patients might spend years in the hospital, or even finish out their lives there, far away from family and loved ones. Today, a psychiatric hospital stay is more likely to be counted in days than years. People who struggle even with severe and persistent mental illness remain in the larger community. And among mental health professionals, the focus of care is on getting better. Recovery. Signe Ruddy says in that way, the Traverse City State Hospital seemed to be ahead of its time.
I think that if I recall history about that particular state hospital, and I've seen several others. I've seen one in Arizona, and I've seen two or three in Michigan. And that particular one had some philosophy about recovery from the get-go, which was fairly modern, whereas some of the others I've seen are not. They look like little prisons out on a prairie, on a flat, little cells, cinder block cell buildings that are very institutional and with fences around them and look like little prisons. And this one is in a beautiful location with rolling hills. It had a farm. It had some thoughts of that very important part of recovery.
But what does that mean? Recovery. Living independently? Getting off psychotropic drugs? Holding down a job? Signe Ruddy says it can mean all of those things, or none. She runs a day program for clients of Northern Lakes Community Mental Health in Traverse City.
Some people, when I first met them, had difficulty talking to me or anybody. And now they relate to me in a very intimate way about their life and what they want to do. So that's exciting. You know, when they had difficulties talking to people, and now they can come to club and talk about what they want to do with their future life. Some people have had the opportunity to grow as leaders in the club. Some people have gone back to work and left the club, which is sad for us. We miss them, but it's very exciting that they're getting back to school or to work and leaving the club. So I think that it's all the individual and what their interest is in their life and what they choose.
This is where clerical meets clerical unit. This is where the computer room is, one of them anyways, one room.
A little bit ago, we heard from Sue Orchard about her experience at the state hospital. Today, she's a regular here at the Traverse House. Members run the center, they clean it.
This is our cleaning supply room.
Cook lunch for one another and work on basic job skills.
This is the cafe where coffee is a quarter a cup. I work behind the counter, and I wipe the counter. I make coffee, and I sell food, and there's yogurt, and there's candy bars, and I don't get paid for it. We're just members here. Members help members.
Sue Orchard hopes her dedication will rub off on others who need encouragement to find their own way toward mental health. Sue's been on medication to control her illness her entire adult life, and she lives in adult foster care. But for Sue, recovery is not about moving out on her own or about getting off meds. For her, it means staying on them. And right now, her goal is to get some paying work. It would give her a little extra spending money to augment her monthly disability check. To get that done, she's gotten a little help from another member.
Yes, I want to clean apartments and houses, and I want to put up flyers for put my phone number up and advertise. And someone said, I'll put up some for you, Sue. I said, okay, I owe you one.
The club has a simple motto.
Traverse House, where members help members grow.
Director Signe Ruddy says when it comes to recovery, that works more wonders than you might think.
I think that mental health issues in our history and still today, there's so much stigma. And in the community, some of these folks like Andy and Sue growing up experienced that in not so pleasant ways. And now to come here and not have that stigma and to be part of a group that's working on meaningful work to run the club means a lot. There's a lot of relationship building within the club, and that's very, very important to individual self-esteem.
And now that the Old State Hospital is fast becoming an urban center, Signe Ruddy has dreams of one day moving her mental health recovery clubhouse into the Commons, bringing the buildings full circle. Our report was produced by Linda Steffen.
That's a place I don't want to go for any reason. It's a sad place for me. I think part of it was that friend of mine that died up there. That's a part of me that just, I find it hard to go back up there anymore.
Patricia Rockburn was a patient at the state hospital more than four decades ago. Altogether, she spent about a year there at various times when she was a young woman.
And I can remember the staff calling me in there and wanting to know if I wanted some medicine. I said no. It was not explained to me that somebody in there could commit suicide. They didn't want to talk to me about it. They didn't want to sit up and say, hey, this is not your fault. This does happen. If you need to come talk to somebody, come and talk. That's not the way they, that's not what the staff did to me. They never wanted to talk to me about it. And you know, when somebody dies, you need to talk to somebody, you know. You need to get those feelings out. And I wasn't allowed to get them out to the staff up there. At all. Because that's a place I was supposed to go for help. And I don't feel they were helping me on this issue. I don't think they did much for me when I went up there because I had given my son up for adoption. I was just in there and I don't remember anybody ever talking to me about it. So I had to do it on my own. I can remember Father Fred. He was up there long before we had the chapel. And he was a good... He was a lot of help to some of us in there. You know, he would be praying with us. We'd go to church and we'd have communion. And I think Father Fred did a lot of things for us up there. I can't remember exactly what they were now, but I think he was a big emphasis to us. Someone that was in our corner that felt we needed to be treated like dignity and respect. I think the staff didn't really care that much about us. It seemed like they didn't want to take the time to talk to us or even get to know us. There was just, I mean, when you got a whole bunch of, when you got about 40, 50 people on a ward, it's kind of hard for the nurses to have time to sit down on one-on-one where Father Fred could do this for us. The staff didn't have the time. By second up meds or dealing with a person that was in the exclusion room banging, they had blah, 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 stuff like that. There just wasn't that many staff there. Maybe five at the most at one time. So when we had a situation, the staff would get on the phone, next thing they know, four or five men would be running down the hallway, you know, helping somebody put in a exclusion room. But the only thing they had in there, everything was taken up. The only thing they had was a mattress and a blanket. So they wouldn't hurt themselves. I'm sure I never did anything to go in there. Even when my friend died, I didn't want to do anything to go in there. And I didn't want to act up, and I didn't want anybody to know that I was upset over the fact that he committed suicide because that's what I was afraid it was going to do to me. Give me some medication or put me in that little room. I didn't want to go there. So I dealt with it on my own. It took me a long time to cope with it. The fact that it wasn't my fault. And nobody ever told me that's what happens in the state hospital, that people do commit suicide. That was something that was never discussed. I think nowadays in our system, I think when we have a client going through that kind of death or something, I think the staff are more aware of it. They're more in tune to it, which I think is important. Back then it wasn't as important. I think we changed a lot of ways. since the hospital closed down.
Patricia Rockburn was a patient at the state hospital in the early 1960s. Today she works at Northern Lakes Community Mental Health. She lives in Traverse City with her two cats, Vita and Veronica. This is a special edition of Points North on Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Tom Kramer. When the Traverse City Regional Psychiatric Hospital shuttered in 1989, the buildings fell into severe disrepair, left abandoned and decaying for a decade. A whole generation of youth grew up in Traverse City knowing the state hospital grounds only as a creepy place, haunted by its misunderstood former residents. But even in the worst of the building's decay, one woman saw angels in the architecture. Here's IPR's Linda Steffen.
In a 1998 photograph, a worn chair sits in the corner of a dusty room. Light pours in from the outside, seeming to reveal a ghost figure. It's a faint image of a woman, peaceful, a bit downcast, and looking out the window, arms at her side. The image belongs to photographer Heidi Johnson. She was one of the state hospital's first modern tenants as it's being transformed into the village at Grand Traverse Commons. Many of her images are black and white, sometimes infrared, leaving a dark and mysterious feel. Heidi's sister, Gretchen Buckelow, describes the photographer as a spiritual woman. Introverted and sensitive, Heidi could feel the presence of former patients of the Northern Michigan Asylum.
And I always thought she might be afraid when she was living there, but she never was. She knew their presence was there, and she accepted it, and it was not bad. Nope, she was a kindred spirit. She just loved the building, loved scouring around in there and finding new tunnels and places, and loved, photographing it and connecting with the patients that were there. She felt that story needed to be told, and her book was totally about art and her passion.
Heidi Johnson is the author of Angels in the Architecture, a photographic elegy to an American asylum. It won the Michigan Notable Book Award in 2002. She dedicated this book, the greatest work of her life, to those who endured and continue to endure the misunderstood disease of mental illness. And it was personal. She had an aunt who was once a long-term patient in the hospital, and Heidi herself fought depression all of her adult life.
She had been on many different antidepressants over the years, and towards the end she went off them, thinking she didn't want to be on the rest of her life, and I think she evidently shouldn't have gone off. They were saving her life.
Heidi Johnson took her own life. August 4th, 2008, 1 month shy of her 45th birthday.
And she was so talented, and she was pretty shy. She didn't like to have boast about her work. So I feel like now I can get her work out there, and I hope she appreciates it. And I hope that connection lives on, that when people think about the state hospital and the commons, that they remember Heidi and all the hard work and dedication she put into it, and her lifelong passion, photography and mental illness. She really she struggled with that.
A year after her big sister's death, Gretchen Buckelow's been holding on to her sister's legacy by framing and displaying some of her own favorite photographs. I had lunch with her in a Benzie County deli, where her sister's work was on the wall behind us.
Yeah, my favorite, I think, is the one called The Great Escape.
It's a beautiful picture of an arbor with trees, and she had named it Entrance to the Other Side. That's at Watervale. And then most of the other ones are all of the state hospital and the grounds.
This is Gretchen's way of honoring her sister's greatest passion. The art is what remains. The loss is more personal.
She was always there. And as a big sister, you always run to your big sister for advice. And she was so smart and intelligent and compassionate. So I think I miss her friendship.
Now Gretchen is left without her sister, her friend, and advisor as their mother battles dementia. And Gretchen is caring for Mom while raising her 3.5-year-old son, Cooper.
And he still talks about her, you know, where's Heidi, and that he misses Heidi, and he loves Heidi. And so it'll be probably a couple of years yet before we explain the whole thing to him.
What Cooper knows is that Heidi is with the angels, and she's in the architecture. For those of us who cherish her images of a glorious old Traverse City landmark.
Angels in the Architecture, a photographic elegy to an American asylum, was published in 2001 by Wayne State University Press. Author Heidi Johnson died last year at age 44. Our reporter is Linda Steffen. You can see some of Heidi's photographs at our website, ipr.interlochen.org. We thank her family for allowing us to publish them. By the way, the title of the book, Angels in the Architecture, was inspired by some Paul Simon lyrics.
He looks around, he sees angels in the architecture, spinning in infinity, he says, amen, hallelujah, if you be my bodyguard.
This has been a special edition of Points North on Interlochen Public Radio. Tom Paulson is our general manager. Peter Payette is our news director. Thanks to Peter and to Linda Steffen for their help in producing this program. And thanks to the many people who share their stories about the old Traverse City State Hospital. I'm Tom Kramer, and this has been Points North on Interlochen Public Radio.